In part 10 of Counterspin Media's Truthathon, Counterspin contributor Samantha Costello, Health New Zealand whistleblower Barry Young, and James Rowe Guskey, a man determined to stop the WHO, dissect the World Health Organization and other globalists.
Counterspin Media is unveiling the Great Awakening and resisting the Great Reset in this 12-hour Truthathon titled Conquering Darkness, heralding humanity's triumph over the New World Order.
All right, now the next section that is coming up is Samantha Costello from the Samantha Edwards Report.
Yep.
And she will be talking to Barry Young. Many of you will obviously know him as the New Zealand data whistleblower. And international guest James Roguski, he is a researcher and author from America.
And he's onto it as well.
He's been on the show before talking about World Health Organization and the international health regulations.
And the best part about it...
So we're going to play... Yep. Sorry, go.
Yep. The best part about it is he will basically mirror exactly what Maria Z said at the top of the show, where these things are happening regardless, and despite people thinking that they can just say, oh, no, we're not going to... We don't
we
have
can
to...
We can tweak it here and there. Yeah, no, we need to exit. It.
Yeah, and that's why James will sort of give you the skinny on it and tell you the only way you can get around that is probably just to get the hell out of the whole thing.
Yeah, so Calvin and I are going to hand over to Samantha. She is in the hot seat and she'll be talking to these two lovely gentlemen.
Yes, hi. Welcome, Barry and James. It's wonderful to have you here.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you very much.
Lovely to have you. I consider myself very privileged to be sitting here with you two titans of the truth.
Well, it's Sam.
It's a real honour. Thank you for being here. James, perhaps you could start us off by briefly explaining what the Pandemic Treaty or Pandemic Accord and the IHRs, the International Health Regulations, actually are for those who may not know.
Absolutely. And I'll try to keep it brief because I think I know we're a little bit pressed on time here. You've already explained very clearly that there are two separate agreements going forward, amendments to existing regulations. And, you know, let me start out with a little bit of good news and a little bit of good news.
That'd be great.
The amendments were supposed to have been completed and submitted 4 months in advance of the May 27th assembly. So that would have been January 27th. And they knew back in October that they were not anywhere near an agreement. So they've completely missed their deadline. By their own rules, they should not even be allowed to consider them. Well, they don't follow their own rules. They work on another system that they make up as they go. So they continue to have meetings in February, in March, and they have their last meeting scheduled for April 22nd to the 26th. So there is still plenty of time to, you know, have everyone become more aware of what is going on with those amendments. I'll try to simplify it because a couple of weeks ago, I got a hold of a leaked version of the amendments from February 9th. They've been keeping it secret for well over a year, all of the various negotiations. And the thing to pay attention to with the amendments is they want to interject the terminology for quarantines for international travelers. They want to amend Articles 24 and 27, and then they also want to have the WHO be the organization that decides which tests and which jabs the nations around the world could use. So if you go away on holiday and you land off a cruise boat or an airplane or whatever it might be, and you have to go through customs, they said all the way back in November of 2022, as long as you're properly jabbed or properly tested, which I'm going to kick it over to Barry, you know, properly jabbed, what in the world does that mean? Okay. And so if you're properly jabbed and properly tested, then you could move around. Well, the problem with that concept is the jabs don't stop infection. They don't stop transmission. They derange your immune system, cause disability, disease, and death. And the tests are really just bogus to make a case demic. So the amendments are much more tricky than I think a lot of people have been talking about, because they want to institute international travel quarantine. Now, I think that happened, you know, in New Zealand and Australia. You guys are already down with that. You understand, you know, they're more than happy to do that. The last thing is the treaty, which I think almost everybody has misunderstood. And I'll try to summarize it in two sentences. It's a business deal. It's a trade agreement. It's got nothing to do with your health. Their solution to prevent the next pandemic is to spend $30 billion a year to have teams go looking for pathogens wherever they might find them.
Yeah.
The local bat cave or your veterinarian's office or the swab that they want to stick up your nose or anywhere else they might be looking for some type of pathogen. Bring them in to the WHO coordinated laboratory network, maybe do some gain of function on them and set up what they call a pathogen access and benefit sharing system. It essentially comes down to when South Africa and Botswana identified a very different variant, Omicron, and they handed it over to the world as they thought they were obligated to do. They're not happy that Pfizer and Moderna worked that into the boosters and made billions of dollars, and they didn't share any of the benefits. So what they're arguing about is a pathogen access and benefit sharing system where if we find a deadly pathogen and we hand it over to the central biohub, what are we going to get in return? I kid you not. Wow. That's what this negotiation is stuck on.
Unbelievable.
Then they would have the WHO be in charge of a global distribution and logistics network. They proudly bragged about a month ago that they have a 20,000 square meter distribution hub in Dubai, just one of their six regions. 20,000 square meters, that's four football fields. Imagine the corruption that you could engage yourself in with a budget of $30 billion a year and, you know, four football fields of a distribution hub in one of your six regions that you have to fill with pandemic-related products. So, you know, I've described this as the new OPEC. You guys were talking about fuel and, you know, all that sort of thing earlier. Yeah. OPEC stands for the oil producing exporting countries. It's a cartel that controls a lot of that industry. Well, the new OPEC is the Organization of Pandemic Emergency Corporations with the WHO as their central distribution and marketing team. And so to me, that doesn't seem like a plan to prevent the next pandemic. It seems like a plan to profiteer from the next pandemic. Go look for pathogens, declare an emergency, scare everybody. You got to rotate that stock that you got in your distribution hub. So, you know, you got to have emergencies all over the place. Employ that however you can get local officials to abuse the rights and freedoms. And everybody in New Zealand knows that all too well, how that happens on a local basis. So you then get contracts the next year when the framework convention has the conference of the parties meet on a yearly basis, much like the framework convention for climate change. They would set up a whole new bureaucracy. A bunch of unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats would go to a party once a year in Geneva and decide your future. So if you like the framework convention for climate change, you'll probably love the framework convention for pandemic prevention, preparedness, and response. But I don't think so. And so I'll put a couple of links in the Zoom chat. I don't know if you guys will be able to get them out to your readers. In New Zealand, if you go to petitions.parliament.nz, petitions.parliament.nz, and search for pandemic, you'll see that there's an active petition that you can sign up until April 7th. So there's a little bit more than a week to just tell the government, no, you know, reject these. And then you can also go to voicesforfreedom.co.nz. They've been doing great work just collecting all this information, you know, sending letters to officials and so forth. So that, again, is voicesforfreedom.co.nz. And all of my information around the world, you can go to exitthewho.org. exittohu.org. And I always give my phone number on every interview I do. I know I'm in California and you might have to use some code or use Signal or Telegram or WhatsApp, but you can reach me directly at 310-619-3055. You know, send me a text message or call if you have any questions. I'm not serious about it. You know, this is something that we must stop. And they're having trouble. I'll leave it with this. They just spent the last 2 weeks for the first time negotiating the treaty with a new draft that they submitted on March 13th. It was 29 pages. For the first time, they treated it as a truly a negotiating text. And in the 8 or 9 days, or maybe 10 days that they were negotiating, it ballooned up to 140 pages from 29 pages because there were 5,000 text changes that the nations wanted to make. So they're a long way from reaching consensus on this. There's rumblings that they're going to give up. Well, I don't count any chickens, you know, before they're hatched. Now is the time to push harder. I'd like to steal one of their old slogans. We've got 2 months to flatten the WHO. They gave us 2 weeks to flatten the curve. We've got 2 months to let them know that we're not having any of this.
Excellent. Thank you so much, James. Yeah, that's a great explanation. Unfortunately, here in New Zealand, our government pretty much treats petitions like toilet paper. I'm going to be honest. They don't seem to take them very seriously.
Everywhere around the world, it's a way of informing your fellow citizens and getting connected. You share the petition with them. You ask them if they signed it. And if they say, yeah, you know, I did, then you know you've got someone that you can work with to do more on whatever else it is you might want to work on.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Thanks, James. So, Barry, this is all talking about potential future harm. Obviously, but can you tell us what's the extent of harm that may have already been inflicted on New Zealanders through the last vaccine mandates, according to the analysis of your database?
Well, I think we all know the extent of harm that we've had for our friends and families, neighbours, what have you. We're all aware of the mandates and the lockdowns, the joblessness. All that sort of stuff. It's had a huge impact, negative impact on New Zealand. I've got a question for James, actually. I just want to know, with all this WHO taking control of the government around the world, the governments, who's actually benefiting? Where's all the money going? You know, it's just one of the things I just was just thinking about. There's a pile of money involved somewhere. So who is actually making it? Who's getting the cash?
To make a very long story short, the global north, which interestingly enough is not geographic, it's really a line of demarcation between wealthy and relatively poor nations. So Australia and New Zealand are actually part of the global north because they're developed nations. What they want is they want to convince developed nations to contribute billions of dollars into a global fund so that money can be used to build out what I call the pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex in the poorer nations of the global south, because they missed out on all these wonderful jabs the first time around. I'm obviously being facetious. They want to build mRNA laboratories and testing facilities and genomic sequencing labs in poorer countries because they didn't have that infrastructure over the last 4 years. And, you know, you would think that the nations that actually did better and had less death and less disease, that they would be exporting what they did to the other nations and, you know, thanking their lucky stars that they missed out on the jabs. But the people who are in the negotiations are arguing that they missed out on the profits from those jabs.
Right. So it's not about health at all. So what happened in Africa was they basically avoided the pandemic. They were all pretty much unscathed from the COVID stuff because they had access to stuff like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. So why isn't the WHO using stuff like that?
Well, you know, It's the name of these agreements and organizations. And Samantha, I love your shirt. I meant to mention that. I know it's, I think it's the UN shirt, but it's the same evil.
Yeah.
The World Health Organization is not about your health. The international health regulations would be more properly called the International Surveillance, Monitoring, Reporting, Emergency Declaring, Fear-mongering Regulations. When you realize that the purpose that these negotiations were started was the poorer nations were upset that they were not given equitable access to the jabs. And the reason for these negotiations is equity. Now, equity in financial terms is money. And so they want to redistribute wealth so they can build out the industries that caused all of the problems that you ultimately reported on. It's insane. So if you try to make sense of it, you're going to have a hard time. But if you realize that it's evil and it's greed, then you understand what they're really doing.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
So what is the end game? Is it population control? Is it population reduction? Is it a combination of the two?
I think maybe they see that as just a side benefit. And obviously I'm being facetious. They are looking to gain control of the industry that would make enormous profits, because when people are in fear, they make really, you know, wrong decisions. But ultimately what, you know, I think they're really doing here is they live in another world where they believe their own propaganda. They really seem to honestly believe that, you know, nations who avoided the problem, as you said, need the solutions that are causing, you know, disease, disability, and death around the world. It's some sort of mental illness that makes it so that they cannot see the information that they don't want to see.
Mm.
And you know, how you fix that mental disease, I really don't know.
But how did they get so powerful, though? It's like, yeah, these people are psychopaths, and you've just got to look at the likes of, you know, Schwab and Gates and stuff like that to know that they are.
If you go above the Schwab and the Gates, and you just go to Big Pharma, okay. I think each and every one of us has to just look at their business model. Their business model is they trick people into getting tested. Totally healthy person. Oh, you got to go in for your yearly checkup. They check your blood pressure, your cholesterol, your sugar, whatever, until they find something that they can then convince you. You need to have a poison that you swallow on a daily basis to fix a number on a test. That's the starting point where they get you. You're maybe caught at a moment where you're a little tense, so your blood pressure's up, or you ate something wrong the day before and, you know, numbers in your blood are a little bit different. If they can convince you that the solution to that measurement on a test is a new poison, or maybe you're going to get some mysterious problem that, you know, we've talked about. So if we inject something into your arm, that'll protect you from this mysterious thing that you should be very afraid of. Those tools, the tests, the drugs, and the jabs, are customer acquisition tools. They don't make anybody healthier.
Yeah.
They make their industry wealthier.
So it's all about shifting products.
Until each person understands what their business model is,
yeah.
You keep going back to the doctor, getting a prescription for a poison. You swallow it, and a couple of months later, you got another problem. And it's astonishing, but people just don't seem to be able to put two and two together and go, wait a minute, why am I swallowing all these poisons and injecting them under my skin? That doesn't seem to be making anybody healthier.
No, we're being culled. I mean, that's the truth of it. It's not about making us healthy. There has been a cull. Even the CDC and their own data reveal that there's been a 13,200% increase in heart disease, and only in the jabbed. Stats New Zealand says that our live birth rate's lower than before World War II, continues to decline. It's the same all over the world. And then there's the massive increase in turbo cancers, extremely aggressive, present at a late stage, and our doctors are just baffled. Speaking of fake vaccines, there's a raft of new so-called vaccines in the WHO's Immunisation Agenda 2030, which may be mandated in the event of a fake, the WHO's acronym for a public health emergency of international concern, you know, basically when Betty in Idaho sneezes or something. But would I be right, James, to speculate that this may be how it will go, that there'll be a weak fake reason for a fake, and then we'll be mandated to take this raft of poisons under WHO governance?
Close. In the amendments, they would add to the fake something that has an even lower threshold, which they would call an emergency action alert. So on the low end, if something is not big enough to be a fake, it'll be an early action alert, which could be, you know, they reported that they had 37,000 notifications in 2023 from nations around the world that something was going on, right? Well, none of those things became a pandemic, but they could easily say, oh, we have a problem. And the mandating is not going to come from the WHO. All of the officials who abused your rights and freedoms over the last 4.5 years, they didn't need any amendments to the international health regulations or a new treaty to abuse your rights and freedoms the way they did. So if they can find a reason to find a pathogen wherever they want, and the local officials are compliant, and the fear-mongering can be targeted on an area where, you know, they find some, I don't know, woolly mammoth bacteria that came out of the tundra in Canada, you know, they'll have a woolly mammoth vaccine, and there'll be a fear mongering program about see how, you know, climate change is causing pandemics. You know, I joke with people in Australia, they don't have to worry about disease X, they got to worry about disease K. It might be some kangaroo pathogen or koala pathogen or whatever it might be. If they can target an area and say there's a problem there, they can swoop in, try to convince everybody there through their local officials to do insane things to their body, and then walk away and say, oh, look how wonderful we are. We prevented the next pandemic, when it was all just a fraud.
Just a fraud. Yeah, I think their latest propaganda was sunbathing. I mean, we've had falling in front of sleep in front of the TV. I think it was even a day of sunbathing, the WHO tells us now, can kill you. They really don't want us getting that vitamin D.
Ridiculous.
Can I actually just ask you, James? Sorry, Barry. I just wanted to ask about the enforcement, okay, because I guess that's probably what has a lot of people concerned. To me, it looks as if there is a few different instruments involved. I mean, the NDAA, the National Defence Authorisation Act, passed 19 pages of pandemic amendments in December 23, which state that the US Army can be deployed to a hostile country, and that's deemed as a country that isn't abiding by the WHO international pandemic law. So they can basically, it sounds like, invade another country and force their residents to take the WHO's poisons. So, I mean, I think here it certainly seems as if the main method of enforcement is going to be the digital ID, AI World Society ID, and blocking of vaccines to currency and essential services to the non-compliant. And we saw the Australian Senate passed the digital ID bill here just a couple of days ago. So it's getting very close to home. But have you thought about this, James, you know, how they will actually enforce these hideous laws?
In addition to what you said, I mean, primarily, you've already experienced how they would do that again. It's local officials. I mean, the person that you could name who tried to or successfully, you know, attempted to infringe upon your rights and freedoms, whether it's your employer or some local health official or, you know, a police officer, whatever it might be, those are the people who would be, you know, the frontline enforcers, the same as it was over the last 4.5 years. Interesting that you mentioned the National Defense Authorization Act. I'm guessing maybe people here heard about Event 201 from 2019, where the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Johns Hopkins did a tabletops, you know, simulation exercise.
Such a coincidence. Pretty much,
such a coincidence. It pretty much, you know, and then they did a similar thing with what I call money pox, and it was almost, you know, spot on. But the latest one that they did, that I know of anyways, was in October of 2022, and it was called Catastrophic Contagion. And it was centered in some made-up countries that would be found in eastern Venezuela and Guyana. And what is going on there currently is they just found oil. I mean, this is real-life stuff. They found a lot of oil a number of years ago off the coast of Guyana, and Venezuela has claimed that they've annexed two-thirds of Guyana. Well, the NDAA from the year before, 2022, the Defense Department pledged $5 billion over the next 5 years to go into the World Bank Pandemic Fund. And in 2023, they dished out $340 million to 37 countries around the world to start building out all of these bio labs that the WHO is talking about. The Defense Department's already doing it. Well, 12 nations in the Caribbean got donations to start doing exactly that. And I noticed, I had a little fun with it. You got to have fun with this, otherwise you're not doing it right. I noticed a year and a half ago that they failed to reserve the domain name catastrophiccontagion.com. So I snagged it.
Nice.
So if you want to go see what
Good
they're
job.
Up to, go to catastrophiccontagion.com. Don't do a search for it because you'll get their stuff. They are basically planning for 2025, you know, that's where the next thing is going to happen. And at the Thursday meeting a little bit more than a week ago at the International Health Regulations Negotiations for the Treaty, Precious Mtsotso, who's the co-chair of the group that's doing the negotiations, she's from South Africa, she very, very softly said, well, you know, the negotiations aren't going that well. And, you know, you would all be very sad if something were to happen in early 2025 and we hadn't reached this agreement. And you just go, you got to be kidding me. I can't believe she actually said that. So if you, you know, look at what they tell you is coming. They did it with Event 201 with COVID. They did it with Moneypox with their tabletop exercise. And what they're talking about is Eastern Venezuela, Guyana, Caribbean problem. But this one is going to be targeted at children.
Yeah, maximum fear. Yeah. Am I right to say that Tedros has standing authority to declare one of these emergencies? Is it him who would do that?
He can make the declaration, but people need to understand that that enables many local governments to piggyback on that. It's not an order. It's not like he says that he's declared a fake and so you have to declare a fake. It's more, and I actually revealed this 2 years ago, I found that on the very last day of the Obama administration, the CDC put into the Federal Register a document about quarantines and emergencies and all that sort of thing. And part of the definition of the regulations and the rules that our health minister would be authorized to declare a public health emergency in the United States is tied directly where it essentially says, well, if Tedros says so, then he can say so. It's not Tedros says so, so you have to. And people get that mixed up. But it's an enabling system where if Tedros just makes a declaration because he wants to, it cascades downward. The national minister makes a declaration. The state or province makes a declaration. And everybody freaks out. And then you go and you look and you go, well, wait a minute. Is there actually really a pandemic going on here? It's just somebody said so, so somebody said so, so somebody said so. And we, the people, have to be the ones that go, no. There is no emergency here. You're just using a psyop on me. You don't get to tell me what to do ever, even if there was, you know, death and destruction and all these problems.
Isn't that what non-binding going to binding sort of means, though, that they are moving from becoming an advisory to a governing body?
The whole non-binding thing, I feel, is a red herring, a decoy. That here's what happened with that. Some of the nations implemented that, actually technically Bangladesh. Bangladesh submitted amendments that would put Tedros in charge of the distribution of products. And they wanted him to be the boss of that and say, oh, you know, nation X has to manufacture whatever's needed and give it to nation Y. And so they were trying to make his recommendations about logistics and distribution of products where he would be the boss of that. That got pushed into the pathogen access and benefit sharing system in the other agreement. And in the latest version that was leaked, that's all gone. They're trying to do that, you know, the now the conference of the parties and the WHO would be in charge of distributing products, because that's what they were really originally concerned about. It wasn't meant to be him telling your doctor how to treat you. You've got all the problems you need with that with your current health minister. And however doctors are controlled by medical boards and all that sort of thing, they just want to be able to point at the WHO and say, hey, the WHO says there's a problem, and we're going to tell you what, you know, we want you to do. It may be in alignment with them, but it's not an order. It's because your local people want to be able to say, oh, well, you know, we don't get to think. They told us it's a problem, so here's what we have to do.
Yeah.
And it's the same problem it was over the last 4 years.
Right, right. Just to clarify, though, if a member state does vote no at the vote in May, will they still be subject to the treaty and the amendments if they are actually passed?
Well, there's two separate things going on. And it's a darn good question. With the amendments, they're seeking consensus. They want every nation to be on board. They don't like it, you know, that it's a public vote. They just want to have everybody go, oh, it's all good. And so New Zealand actually rejected the amendments that were fraudulently adopted in 2022. So each nation, regardless of what happens in May, if your head of state just writes a letter to the WHO and says, no thanks, not for us, then they wouldn't apply. But their deal is tricky, because what they're trying to pass, even if you left the WHO, what they're trying to implement is a global quarantine on international travel. So even if New Zealand said, no, thank you, we don't want your amendments, we're leaving the WHO, if everybody else, every other nation is still in the game and you want to go on vacation or holiday anywhere, when you get there, if that nation is playing by the WHO rules, you're still screwed. Okay, so this is a global problem that has to be stopped. No, you don't get to require anybody on the planet has to have a fake vaccine that doesn't work or a test that would give you some type of justification to put that traveler into quarantine. The answer has to be no, regardless of whether the amendments, you know, pass or not. That is just an absolute fraud. And all of the everything that everybody's talking about is a distraction from, wait a minute, the jabs don't work and the tests don't work.
Yeah.
So requiring a jab or a test is insane.
How long would that quarantine be?
Well, that would be up to the local government. So how long would you want New Zealand to quarantine, you know, if you've got a family member coming over from Australia and they come to visit and they don't pass the test? That's up to New Zealand, how they want to abuse a foreign citizen. This is the neat trick that they're playing, because most people, unfortunately, go, oh, you know, dirty foreigners, keep them out. Okay. Well, that's fine until you're the dirty foreigner who's getting off your cruise ship or your airplane or whatever, and you don't pass the test and you find yourself in quarantine.
If you look at the UK fires document, you know, the in the UK, the government document, It talks about airports being closed by 2030 anyway, you know, end of public travel. So I guess it all, but, you know, it's funny because it's like you're talking about, I've noticed how the World Health Organization and all these organizations, these terrorist organizations, play mind games with us. I don't know if you've noticed, if you saw the propaganda they put out of a treaty torn down the middle a while ago, James, but that was very interesting. It didn't make sense, but it's as if they're trying to tie it almost into the religious apocalyptic narrative where the head of the one world government, the Antichrist, makes a treaty with the people and then he breaks it and slaughters the people, basically. And that was all very mysterious until now. But it's like, it's mind games to manipulate the masses into thinking that they are more powerful than they are and that they're backed by powerful forces, which I believe is a little bit the same with some of the Satanism they shove in our faces. A lot of it's mind games, a lot of it's real, but a lot of it's shock and awe so that we think we can't defeat them, but they are a small bunch of limp-wristed aristocrats and power and money wouldn't save them if every nation actually stood up. There are billions of us, literally billions.
Well, you know, the one hero that we have here with Barry is the perfect example of what one person can do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I'm just puzzled as to where they get their power from, because if we don't elect them, who was given them the authority to do this? If it's not us, it's just crazy. Yeah. It is absolutely
the
crazy.
The individual nations who send unelected appointed delegates to speak for you collectively make up the World Health Assembly. And technically, the World Health Assembly, all of these many delegates, are the governing body of the WHO. But as has happened with every government around the world, legislative bodies who meet once a year, it's pretty hard for them to control the bureaucracy that's there 365 a year. And so our local legislatures have very often abdicated authority over to the executive branch of our government. You know, in many countries, Australia, New Zealand, the parliament doesn't have a word to say about whether or not the executive branch gets into an international agreement. It's up to the executives. So they send an appointee to go speak for you. And unless you're yelling at the health minister or the foreign minister or whomever might be involved in that, they just quietly do whatever the heck they want to do. Mm. And that's really where the problem is, that legislatures are not really an equal branch of government. It's been taken over by the executive branch around the world. So we're all living really in a dictatorship that is very hard to get out of power.
We are. And I think the bureaucracy thing is amazing, because we have a minefield of bureaucracy here in New Zealand to get anything done, basically, you know, the government organizations and departments and whatnot to actually get anything. An OIA takes months and months and months. That's an official information request. And yet, when you look back, and this is all documented and recorded, what they were saying about the masks, for example, just one example, is that they were all saying, Jacinda Ardern said it, Ashley Bloomfield said it, they said masks, they don't work, they won't be effective. And even the guy on TV1, the doctor that they refer to every now and then, he said, masks don't work. They all said it. And then all of a sudden, Tedros comes out and said, we must all wear masks. And all of a sudden, all over the whole world, everyone had to wear a mask from that point onwards. And they were getting arrested if they didn't.
Mm. Yeah.
Where's the bureaucracy there? Where was the legislation? Where was the debate? Nothing. It was just one guy said it, and yet the whole world moved in lockstep.
No, you just got to point to Samantha's shirt. I mean, it's just evil. It's just absolutely evil.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that is some power that was exercised right there, like mind-blown power for someone just to say that at one instant, and then the next day the whole world changed, and it changed big time, with the masks just being one example.
Yeah, but it's been developed for a long time. I mean, we saw that back with the Spanish flu. That was the, you know, other major mask mandating time in our history. And I mean, even
did you know masks caused more deaths?
Oh yeah,
Spanish
Fauci
flu
wrote that because in the Center for Infectious Diseases. He wrote an article about how 95% of the people that died from the Spanish flu died from upper respiratory tract infections.
And they were,
again, they didn't recycle their masks back then. They weren't disposable. So there's that, but there's also the radiation factor. There was other stuff going on. But, yeah.
So it was caused by a bacteria in the mask itself rather than a virus of the flu.
Well, it could have played a factor. I mean, that's what Fauci wrote himself in an article.
For those who have any questions about it, several months ago, I put together a website entitled maskcharade.com. There's plenty of information around the world. It just belies common sense. You can go to maskcharade.com and find out about it. So many pictures of people wearing surgical masks where it was very cold, so you could see their air, you know, the breath condensing, or, you know, with a 3, 4, 5, 6 masks, and someone would use a vape and you could see it go right through. Obviously, the issue is I've done construction work. I've had dirty jobs. There is a time and a place to wear a respirator if you don't want fiberglass insulation in your lungs or some other, you know, particulate matter. Sure, there is a time and a place for that. But what they were advocating was just absolutely absurd. If you watch any of the videos from the bio containment labs, you know, level 3 or level 4, they're effectively wearing a spacesuit.
Yeah.
So if they had handed out spacesuits to everybody, we could have all pretended we were on the moon or something like that. All right. If you have a little battery pack and you're getting purified air and you're breathing it and you get hosed down and disinfected when you take it off to go, you know, wherever it is you go. Well, that's what they do in the laboratory. So what would make anybody think that anything less than that would make any sense at all?
Yep.
It's a psychological operation.
It is.
That
yes.
Most people fell for. And unfortunately, people are still walking around wearing masks. So it's really nice of them to give us all a clue that they don't have a clue.
Yeah.
And so so many things like that, it goes beyond. You have to look at all of pharmakia and ask yourself, you know,
psychology.
To anyone in the audience, you know, no offense to anybody involved, but ask yourself, if you wake up every morning and you take 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 pharmaceutical poisons, how has their psychological manipulation worked on you into your belief that you've got to swallow all those poisons in order to be healthy?
Yeah.
It's time to reevaluate what we're all doing.
That's right.
But there's so many people who do that.
Yeah.
Many of them.
Barry,
you know, you're a good statistician, Barry. One of the stats that I came across a number of years ago, when people talked about comorbidities, that really translates to anyone with numerous comorbidities was most likely taking many medications.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And the best correlate between disease and you know, COVID and some statistic was the number of pharmaceutical medications that the person was taking.
And I've talked to people who say, I'm immunocompromised, therefore I must have all these products because my immune system is compromised. Mm-hmm. It's like they don't take a step back and say, why is my immune system so compromised? Maybe it's because I'm taking all this stuff.
Yeah.
And every pharmaceutical product does have a side effect, there's a downside to it. But when you start saying, oh, the vaccine might have side effects, then people freak out. Say, oh, no, we don't want to know. No, it's perfectly safe and effective. But yet every other drug that you might care to mention, they will agree with you wholeheartedly. Oh, yeah, it's got a side effect. You know, but vaccines just don't want to know. Mm. It's weird. And that goes to pharmaceutical companies having complete immunity as well. It's like, why would they do that? Why would they be exempt from prosecution?
It should be enough in itself, shouldn't it?
When, exactly. That, you know, that says everything,
just the
right?
Big flags flapping and flashing at everyone. But No.
I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, I think people just do not want to believe that, you know, the lies that they have believed for so long are lies, that their government doesn't actually love them, and that Big Pharma doesn't actually want them to be well. You know, they don't want to believe that. But anyway, while I've got you here, Barry, because I know lots of people will want to know, when is the date of your next hearing? Would you mind letting us know?
I think it's April the 23rd at 2:15.
April 23rd. So, okay.
Yeah.
23rd again.
So it's a,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. And is there anything, any developments in your case that you can actually tell us about?
Not
really.
As such, no.
Right.
Well, I know the lawyer's got the stuff from the police. Have actually given him what he wanted, the evidence.
Oh, they have.
That the Crown hasn't
given. Okay.
So he's actually got it on a memory stick that he can read now. So
right. Oh, that's good.
He's looking through that. And yeah, the thing is, if you look at the charge, what I'm charged with, it says I've got to obtain a benefit.
Mm.
So the actual offence itself.
Yeah, how much money did you make, Barry? There's some pretty flash headphones you got there. Are you
Don't
serious?
Say that. They belong to the Ministry of Health. Do not say that.
Okay.
It's this. I haven't given it back to them yet.
And isn't it crazy?
And I'm not allowed to either. That's an ironic thing.
Wow.
It's like, these belong to the Ministry of Health. Sorry about that. But if I go back to the ministry to hand them in, I could be arrested and put in jail for that.
Wow.
So my bail condition.
So you're probably familiar, James. I guess you would have heard Barry's story about his release
yes,
of the data,
of course.
You know, of the database. No personal information,
no.
You know, like that. No personal gain. So as far as I can see, he hasn't even committed a crime. But on the other hand, Ashley Bloomfield, our friend at The Who, he's leading co-chairing the negotiations, I think. He released in 2021 many, many tens of thousands of names, phone numbers, addresses, NHIs, so that people could get chased down to be vaccinated all again without their knowledge or consent. Apparently, that's okay, but Barry, when he's doing it to protect people, could go to prison for 7 years. Is this kind of craziness happening in the US? I guess that's a silly question. Of course,
it is. You have your own unique brand of craziness.
Are we?
And we have,
yep. Oh,
yes.
Wow.
We have ours. Yeah.
We should be honored. Thank you.
Yeah, it is a crazy offense.
It's insane. Well,
because there's no victim. It's a victimless crime.
That's right.
If you can say it's a crime at all.
That's
like,
right.
Where's the pile of bodies? Who suffered?
Oh, I can tell you where the pile of bodies
are. Negative
are.
Impact? Well, yeah, we know that because the vaccine, because I'm trying to prevent something.
Exactly.
I'm trying to say, please do your job. This is a crime that's happening. So, yes, people are dying needlessly and it needs to be looked into. So for reporting that, they want to put me in jail. But have I hurt anyone? Have I injured anyone? Has anyone died as a result of what I've done?
No. Many people are so grateful.
There are no victims.
Yeah. And I'll just quickly throw in, because I know we need to wrap up. Can I just ask you while I've got you, how do you feel about the head of Winston's inquiry into the COVID response being Tony Blakely, the same guy that was responsible for, the biggest lockdown in the world, 262 days in Melbourne, and that was Tony Blakely's doing. He was the modeler there. How do you feel
about
that?
It's like putting the fox in charge of the hen house, isn't it?
Mm. Not exactly
like
impartial.
The COVID inquiry is like a sheep and two wolves voting for what's for dinner.
Mm.
And one interesting fact about Tony Blakely is that he's also an affiliate professor of the Health Metrics Sciences at the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington. And he's also involved with The Who.
Mm.
So it's like, what the hell is this guy doing in charge of our inquiry? Mm.
And Winston says it's the right people, he says.
Can
I just tell you one quick story before we sign off? I used to work for Australian Free Independent Press, and so I got a fair bit of on-the-ground footage from the Melbourne protest. A friend of mine who I was working with there sent me some footage. And the reason I mention this is this is Tony Blakely's modelling, which extended to the enforcement of his protocols. Dan Andrews called him his go-to expert. And Dan Andrews, of course, ordered for the CCTV cameras to be turned off during these protests. I was sent a piece of footage, and some shocking stuff happened, but this one, wow. There's this guy standing there with a megaphone and he's just speaking. He's very respectful. You know, they've been locked down for a couple of hundred days, level four at this point. And there's police just swarm him, all in black. They're mercenaries, not really real police, I don't think. Swarm him. He just gets beaten and beaten and beaten. This is all, you know, I'm watching this on the video. And when the police move away, he is unrecognizable. His face is completely swollen, his eyes shut over. He's trying to talk. He can't talk. And then he dies. And this is Tony Blakely. He is culpable of this. And now we're supposed to accept that the generals of this evil army are going to be running the investigations into the crimes that they committed. It's just absolutely unacceptable. Obviously, they're not going to incriminate themselves, are they? You know, so... Yeah, it's pretty shocking stuff. So anyway, I suppose I think I need to wrap up. but thank you so much. And yeah, like I say, it's just truly been an honor to have you guys both here. Any ideas, anything else you wanted to say? Any ideas of how we can, you know, push back against what the WHO would like to do? James?
If we can get Barry to clone his courage and spread it around the world. We just need more people like that to stand up for what is true, what is right, and what is good.
Yes.
Because the opposite of that is what you're wearing on your shirt. Mm-hmm. It's just pure evil.
That's right. That's where it's at. It's the numbers. It's the numbers. And that's why I believe in independent truth media, because it's awareness that causes people to rise up off their couches in indignance when they start to learn how deeply they've been betrayed. So anyway, is there anything you wanted to say, Barry? Sorry, before we wrap up? Okay.
No, I'm all good. Has Calvin got a Russian accent?
Not yet. I don't think so.
Not yet, no.
No. But yeah, so anyway, I cannot thank you enough for all you've both contributed to the fight. It comes at a great personal sacrifice. I'm aware of that. Thank you from the bottom of my heart and on behalf of so many others. Okay. And James, we're going to talk again sometime, aren't we? Because I've got a lot more questions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Cheers.
Bye.
You are watching Counterspin, New Zealand's media revolution. The platform where truth lives and the government and bought and paid for media lies come to die. Find us at counterspinmedia.com.
We've the right to fight, the right to challenge. That just one message iwi leaders had for the coalition government as they met for the first time ahead of official Waitangi commemorations. Also at the hui, David Seymour, the man pushing for controversial changes to the treaty. Also at the hui, David Seymour, the man pushing for controversial changes to the treaty.
Mr. Dallo, I don't think Mr. Seymour has said anything about changing the Treaty of Waitangi. So, Mr. President, I have to apologise for the misinformation that the New Zealand mainstream media spreads. But I will have my personal attack dog, Winston Peters, onto it and fix this issue once and for all.
I've not seen one apology from one mainstream journalist. And here they go again. And my message to those mainstream journalists is this. You are not going to get away with this. We're coming for you. We're going to outline your dirt program and make sure that you, above all, don't prevail with a tissue of lies.
I believe that Wynne Peters has got what it takes. That means that... he does his homework. When he gets it clear in his mind, he says it. And that's important in politics. And the people respond and they say, I like that bloke because he says what he thinks.
Are you saying that there's a bit of Rob Muldoon in there?
Well, I didn't say that. You said it.
Counterspinmedia.com.
Are you enjoying this 12-hour Truthathon presentation? Do you believe in the importance of Counterspin Media's mission to expose falsehoods and deliver evidence-based factual content? You see, never before in history has it been so important to support a media organisation that is fighting for your freedoms, fighting for your freedom of speech, but also who refuses to be influenced by false narratives. Your donation will help keep them independent, and it's very costly to make such quality content. Please look at their website. There's a number of ways that you can donate, and together we can combat false information. Because you see, at Counterspin is where lies die, but truth prevails.
Keep checking back on counterspinmedia.com and look under the videos tab for more videos from the Conquering Darkness Truthathon.
Counterspinmedia.com, where lies come to die.